Okay, this is Colin Power from Into Infinity with the Riemann hypothesis solution, looking at the pi function and some of the stuff there from the perspective of fourth dimensional mathematics. Some things came back to us about the number I. Obviously, the number I has played quite an important role in mathematics thus far. And for someone like me just to come along and, say that the number I doesn't really work in the fourth dimension and all of that stuff, it causes a little bit of a stir. Let me just explain, it's not that it doesn't work, but really what we're doing with the number I is we're not creating a three-dimensional plane as mathematicians believe they're doing. They're actually creating a two-dimensional plane. That's what zero squared creates. It creates a square. Actually, it's a cross. We should be clear about that. It's a cross surrounded by infinite space. The symbol for this is sometimes represented as a circle divided into four. You see that sometimes as a cross in ancient sort of cultures and things like that. But there has a meaning to that, which is zero squared is at the center. And each one of those spaces then revolves out into infinite space, which is what we have. We have the infinite reciprocal space at all dimension. Now, well, the thing about a cross is in 4D mathematics, what happens is we have that cross, and then when we come to 0 to the power of 3, it creates the hexagon. Yeah, it's a hexagonal plane, and the hexagonal plane is not one that mathematicians work with particularly, but it is a three-dimensional plane. It does have a z-axis, and therefore it is representative of an octahedron in space, an x, y, and z axis, and we can see that from the nature of the thing. But what it does is when we flatten that into 2D space, we can perform fourth dimensional mathematics. And that kind of works through a rotational process, similar to the process of the square. As I kind of mentioned, if you imagine, the Riemann square is kind of like a square that's divided in half, which is kind of like just looking at the whole number section. Remember, with our solution to the continuum hypothesis, we have one square which is a complete square and another square which is half a square, and we just folded number space. And we did that, and it created two opposite squares of joined at the corner point, yeah, where one squared was. You can look into some of that. But what it basically means, if you think about it, is that we're saying that when you divide a square or that space, is that the opposite is at the diagonal. It's a space, it's a 2D space, it's not the line. We shouldn't be looking at the line, we should be looking at the number space. And that's what the number I has tried to do, is try to construct a number plane. But it's a 2D plane, it's not a 3D plane, and we have to be clear about that. And as such, you could say a 2D plane can exist only in two forms. That's either the square or the triangular, which make the two types of 2D. Regular 2D that can only be filled with two different colours. We do make a hexagonal plane, and that's filled with three colours normally. But what you can find is that the hexagon itself can be composed, if it's just a single hexagon, from a simple set of triangles, six triangles arranged. And so when we think about 2e being two triangles, remember that? So we said 2e was in the equation. That would be 2e, and then we'd have three of those at times three. But what actually happens is that the e divides itself, and you get like a kind of black and a white, yeah? So there'll be three upward triangles and three downward triangles. Let me just explain how that works in a little bit once we go through the squaring. So with a similar sort of thing, you can see with the square, we have like say two black opposites and two white opposites, and that forms that type of number space. Now, because basically you could say that the current mathematic is missing the spaces that are white, should we say, and are completely missing the hexagonal plane completely, then we don't have a proper picture of the third dimension. And we've only got actually half a picture of the second dimension even, so it's like we're looking at half a square. So that's one of the reasons why you see this Riemann anomaly where, you know, the zeros are spaced every two. In a way, what you can say is like, in a way you could say that what's happened is we've divided number space into odd and evens, and we're only looking at the evens in a sense, yeah, we're making rotations in that. And that's quite true, because if you think about what's happening, let's say if I rotate, let's say I colour in one side of, let's say we make a cross here, and then we put a triangle in one of it, one corner of it, and we'll colour that, yeah? And we'll just make a rotation, 1, 2, 3, 4, and it comes back to the same place. So when it's in position 1, that's 1, then the next one we'll write 2, and then write 3 below that, write 4 below that, and when I write number 5, which is the spatial, yeah, the spatial numbers, that superimposes itself over the 1. In ordinal numbers, we've done a rotation of 4, so 4 to 5. When we come to the hexagonals, hexagonal plane, we take a rotation, we'll take 6 steps, and what will happen is then we'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and just like that, we'll place the 7th, will be the ordinal, will be the number, will takes it back to the start. So just like the octave, you know, you can understand that as the octave in music, in a sense. And what's happening is that for every time there's a rotation of the square, the hexagon is falling backwards minus 2. So we rotate the square, 1, 2, 3, 4, and the hexagon hasn't completed. It's minus 2 from the one rotation of the square. And so, can you see what's happened here? Minus 2, obviously, that's the Riemann thing, isn't it, yeah? And so as you go round again on the hexagonal plane, it's going to be minus 2 again. Then we get a second non-zero, as it were. And then we're going to go back again, and then it's going to unify, yeah? But what we all see is that the hexagonal plane has now been divided into black upward-facing triangles, if you like, and white downward-facing triangles. We could colour them like that. Whereas the square plane itself will have two black and two white half square that make up a complete square. So that's kind of how the number system actually works in fourth dimensional mathematics. And once you start to look at that from the perspective of what's happening with the zeta plane, the zeta function, now it kind of looks a little bit like a man opening and closing a door, continuously, slowly making his way in a circle. Or another way of looking at it would be an aeroplane with just a line instead of a space as a propeller. And what happens is that this square root of minus 1, as you keep reiterating it, is going to collapse the 0 over and over again. Collapse it, collapse it, collapse it, collapse it, collapse it, collapse it. And as it does, it will collapse 0 into itself. And that's what creates that arc curvature, very, very slow, as you reiterate to infinity, which is what you see with the pi to e to the I to the pi equation, which is kind of what it ends up, you know, equals minus 1, because they've done a half arc. It's a half arc, by the way. It's not a full arc. They didn't do a full arc, you see what I'm saying? It was just a half arc. And that's because of the nature of the mathematic, really, rather than actually, you know, we're missing half the numbers, so you're going to miss all of that, so it's not going to complete the circle, basically, yeah? Because we're missing the density of infinity that Aleph 0.5 provides. That confirms that what we're saying is true, you know, that there are infinities, there is a density of infinity, and we're not matching that with the zeta function. And so what happens is that we end up getting this non-trivials that just pop in and out of the space all the time. And when we're looking at it from a rotational perspective, what we actually see is it's sort of like you're rotating once and you're opening the square, and you're rotating again and you're collapsing the square. You're rotating I, you're performing another calculation with minus I and you're opening it, another calculation, you're closing it. And that's why when you start to perform these infinite calculations, like the ones that you see for the Riemann hypothesis, they're infinite calculations, they go on to infinity, you start to have to realize that you cannot actually express these things as anything, because as we just expressed, once we go through the infinite calculation and we go back to the most simple, which is divide and plus, doesn't even use multiplication, doesn't use any of that, just divide and plus, that we've already created a system of mathematics whereby these algebraic concepts are of no use anymore. And that means that because they are of no use, there is no point in applying the concepts of algebra to the fourth dimensional plane. And that's what I think, you know, the number, I mean, it's not anyone's fault, by the way. I mean, there's a system there still. You could say, you know, any mathematical system has a validity, but what we're saying is if you want to know why it's got all these anomalies in it, that's why we are explaining why it has those anomalies. And once we move into the fourth dimension, what we find is we can calculate the end of infinities, and we're going to show you how to do that in more detail. We've given you a little bit of a few examples from the perspective of the decimal point, yeah, what's happening behind the decimal point. That's the quantization of the effect. When we draw things using geometry, we're actually we're moving into the infinite, because we can draw a circle with a compass. And so actually we do find then exactness. We are actually able to literally put our pencil on the line rather than actually just move up to it, which is what we have to do with the mathematics. So the geometric function are our second type of numbers. We've already told you that. And that's why, is because we can perceive the infinite from the outside and can encapsulate infinity. And so, whereas when we're in number space, it's like the surface within those lines. And so we can only go up to the edge of the line, as it were. And so those lines, contain infinite number space at various densities, is what we're saying. And so by working out the surface area stuff, you're also working out the density relationship of some of these numbers. And if we're using anything but at base infinity, there will be distortion in the wave, and that distortion it's not a negative thing. It's actually what makes different patterns come out of the numbers and form these interesting patterns. But what we have to understand is an infinite number of bases, and so there's each point one will create a different pattern. So that's why we can have literally an infinite number of numbers x equals infinity, and that can equal whatever number we kind of choose, really, but it will devolve to a particular number, and that particular number is a calculable event. It's a calculable number, and because it's calculable, it can produce primes and all that sort of stuff. It uses a different kind of mathematic, but the mathematic is so strange to us at the moment that we don't even have a grasp of it. So it's new territory, but I encourage you to check out some of the simple Excel spreadsheets that we're going to provide, and so that you can start to have a little play around with it for yourself and see how it works, see how the mathematics works. And so then actually I think what happens is the zeta function will become clearer what's happening actually in the fourth dimensional space, and in that case we have solved the Riemann zeta problem, but unfortunately not in the way that mathematics would probably have liked us to solve it. Anyway, that's me, Colin Power, just giving you a little bit more there on some of the rotational functions. We do have a rotational map that you can try out as well if you like to do that sort of thing. You literally just draw a cross and you start writing in an anti-clockwise direction. You write 1, 2, 3, 4 in each corner, and then you just go out in a spiral, 5, 6, 7, 8, da, 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 and you write way up to 25. Do the same with the hexagon, and you can just make an analysis of some of those numbers and what arms they pop out on and things like that. That's one of the techniques that we use, number circles, in order to decode some of the infinite. I'm not going to go too much into detail on this broadcast on that, but if there is interest, you can also look up Peter Plitcher, does some stuff on this thing with his book God's Secret Formula. It's well worth reading. But we would point out that you actually only need to go up to the number 25, because that's the pi, remember? 25 plus a third. And so we don't need anything more than that. That's enough to see us through 5 squared, at least as far as we can go today. There are other numbers, such as the number 7, which works into the vortex codes, as we've discussed. And actually all of this does translate into a universal mathematic that we can also use to decode the atom. So we'll have a little bit more on that in future broadcasts. As for now, that's all we've got time for. So my name's Colin Power. You guys are awesome. And this is a broadcast from Into Infinity, decoding the Riemann hypothesis and putting things back on track with fourth dimensional mathematics.